One day there was a knock on the door that was like, hi, we're scouting for a movie. Would you be interested in using your home? Actually, it's going to be directed by Martin Scorsese. I mean, I was like, you think I was born yesterday? You think I came to America for you to tell me Martin Scorsese is coming to town? Get off my porch. And so my dad was like, no, absolutely not. And my daughter has piano lessons, so you got to go. And they were like, if you wait like an hour, we will let you meet Martin Scorsese and Leonardo DiCaprio. And I was like, you must think I'm an idiot. I gotta take my daughter to piano.
This is Podcrush,
the podcast that takes the sting out of rejection, one crushing middle school story at a time.
And where guests share their teenage memories, both meaningful and mortifying.
And we're your hosts. I'm Nava, a former middle school director.
I'm Sophie, a former fifth grade teacher.
And I'm Penn, a middle school dropout. We're just three Baha'is who are living in Brooklyn,
wanting to make stuff together with a particular fondness for awkward nostalgia.
Well, I struggle with nostalgia. I'm here for the therapy. Today we have a very special guest. Her name is Iowa Debris. Well, Sophie, why don't you introduce her? Because you're the one who even brought her on.
Yeah, so Iowa Debris is our guest for today. She is a stand-up comedian and writer. She's the voice of Missy on Big Mouth, and she plays Hattie on Dickinson. She's actually, I mean, I feel like every week she's in something new. She's
in The Bear on FX. I'm telling you, probably an Emmy nomination in her future very soon.
She and I actually went to college together at NYU, and this was our first time seeing each other since college. And I feel like this episode was really special for me because we both acknowledged that we wished we had hung out more in college, which was really sweet and felt kind of like a middle school moment. She did amazing on this episode. It's one of my favorites. So without further ado, let's get into it.
And just a reminder, we've changed the format. We're putting the stories at the end. So if you want to hear me doing that narration bit, it's particularly poignant. It connects to Io's story. It's about periods. And
you said that periods. Periods.
When I think of me as like a very underweight, like 12-year-old being like, so dad, like you miss church and I just want you to know, like, I hope you don't go to hell. Like, like that, I was like, really, that was like my vibe. And I was like, evangelizing.
That's a strong vibe.
To my teacher. It's a very strong vibe. It's a very strong vibe. and very strong in that way. And then like really sensitive in a lot of others. I loved reading. I was very, very anxious about school. And now I'm like, oh, Io, you had anxiety. But I would be like so wound up about school and getting good grades. In sixth grade, I got my first B+ on a report card. And I went to the teacher after school and cried. His name was Mr. G. He lived in Cape Cod and would commute to school every day.
What did he
in
do?
A trailer van. He like used to work in the Army.
No, when you cried, I mean.
Oh, he literally, well, he used to like be in the Army. Oh, he was like this huge, enormous, like bald man. Mm-hmm. Who looked like Mr. Clean. And I like, you know, this 4-foot child is like, please, I can't get a B plus. I need to get an E minus or I won't go to college. And he was like, I don't think that's true. But if you want, I guess you can do extra credit. And I like did like 3 extra credit projects in order to get an A+. And he was like, just for so you know, like it's not that serious. Just for next time. It's really not that serious at all. But that's kind of like who I was.
Okay, but this must have been around the time you were realizing you were funny, right? Or when was that?
It's weird to explain. I basically feel like I made a conscious decision to be funny. I feel like I was always weird. And I feel like I always like liked to try hard and like work hard. But I remember like in 7th and 8th grade just being like, I don't like how I feel people are treating me, and I feel like I don't like how people are perceiving me. So I like have all the know-how to be funny. So I'm like going to be funny. And like eighth grade, I was like, I'm going to buy a pair of sneakers and I'm going to like make jokes in class and I'll like still work hard. Wow. But like, that's what I'm going to do.
Like those were two were separate goals or related? The sneakers?
The sneakers were related in my head to this idea of like, I really wasn't wearing sneakers. I was wearing sort of like flats.
I'm changing my persona.
And I was like, if I wear sneakers, people will know that I'm cool. And then if people can perceive me as cool, then they'll be able to perceive me as funny as well.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, I'm making jokes. And I had this history class in eighth grade. And I was like, I'm good at history. So this is like the class in which I'll make jokes. And really a scary child. And I remember I was like, all right, I'm making jokes now. This is what I do. Like, I make jokes. Wow. And the coolest girl in my school was like, you've been funny lately. And I was like, all right, fuck yeah, like we're in. It's a crazy age, and I feel like you feel like there are these benchmarks. I mean, like even like getting my period, I didn't get my period until I was 16. And there was nothing wrong with me. That's just sometimes people don't get it until they're 16. But I had a friend who got it when she was 10, you know? Yeah. And it's like you're both of you feel like you're crazy. Mm-hmm. And you're like, I should be getting this on my 13th birthday. Exactly.
Not a day later.
Midnight. And that is when I am a perfect woman. You know? Like, I don't know. It's interesting.
It's so weird because periods, we've evolved, but they were like so stigmatized. But it was also among girls like a thing of like getting your period
I was like pumped to get my period.
Yes. I got mine when I was 12 and I was so proud.
You should.
That like I got it early.
You should be subconsciously.
still
stings. Yeah, I'm jealous of you. No worries. I had a signal with a friend that was when we both got our periods. We would send each other a text message that was just a period.
Oh.
Really secretive and cool. Would anybody know? Okay, very, very
secret. It's
cool,
like a red one
code.
Too, like the red dot.
Yeah. We just send each other. Well, this is pre-emoji. Yeah. This is.
I was going to say, it must have been pre-emoji.
This is pre-emoji. This is like around the time, the era of the Sidekick, of the Motorola Razr, of the LG Chocolate, of the LG Slide.
Keep going.
I like the specificity. This is
really- so I would immediately go to the Verizon store in the mall and cry because my parents wouldn't buy me a phone. And for a really long time, I would either text on my mom's phone, embarrassing, or...
Is that why you needed the code?
We would send each other a period. And when I got my period, I sent her the text and she was like, what?
Huh?
And I was like, I got my period. And she was like, oh, congrats. It was so long. It did so much time had passed. And she was like, what?
You were waiting.
A code? I was like, I must send the text. Yeah.
Okay. So wait a second. When did you get your period for the first time? Do you remember that day at all?
I got it when I was jogging with my dad. We went on a jog and I was having these like horrible stomach pains and like I just felt like I was gonna poo, to be honest. And I was like, what is wrong with me? And my dad was like, push through it. Come on. Come on, push through it. And I was like, we need to stop. I feel like I'm going to die. I'm going to the bathroom. Like, we need to find a bathroom. We went to this horrible small sandwich shop that's now closed. And it's like, was run by this one guy who would take 50 minutes to make one sandwich. I don't know why we went there. Boston is a trap. And I was like in the horrible, stinky little bathroom. And I was like, I pooped out the front. And what is this brown glue? And then I was like, oh no. And I immediately like wadded up toilet paper, obviously wearing leggings. So there's now disgusting lump underneath. And I'm like,
oh my God,
Father, we must go home. And he's like, my sandwich didn't come yet. It takes 40 minutes. I was like, we have to drive home now. And so we went home and immediately I went to the bathroom and I'm rifling through the cabinets for anything. At that time, my mom also had me when she was like 40, I think.
Oh,
and
no, so she was past it.
She was past it. So there were no beds. Oh. And I'm like, and so I'm like, Mother, what did I do? And she's like, huh? And I'm like, I got my period. And she's like, oh, you didn't get that yet? I know I didn't get that yet, lady.
Mom,
like,
I don't need this from you.
I need pets. quiet. So she's like, all right, just like stay in the bathroom or whatever. Meanwhile, I want to die. I feel like this is the worst thing I've ever experienced in my life. And like truly at the point that was the most excruciating physical pain I'd ever experienced in my life. And we didn't really have painkillers in my house. So I just was like drinking hot water and like writhing on the floor. And then I hear a knock and I'm like, oh my God, yes, it's Helen with pads. Let's go. I open the door and it's my father. And he's like, his back is towards me and he's like, I heard you got your period. And I was like, no! He's like, you're not supposed to know that. And he was like, I was gonna find out anyway. And I was like, what is that even supposed to mean? Whatever. And he was like, well, it happens. And he closed the door.
It happens.
Literally, the father of a daughter. It happens. And then my mom brought me a pad. And then I was like, this is awful. This is what I've waited for. You're kidding me. Yeah. And then cut to now.
And the perfect woman.
Here we are. Yeah. But horrendous. Wouldn't wish it on. Wouldn't wish it on anyone.
You know, that, I mean, so relatable, so visceral, the wadded up toilet paper.
Just
really intense.
Who told sensation. Me? Who told me?
Actually, I remember the most popular girl in school taught me how to use tampons. And then I taught my mom how to use tampons.
I was like the late bloomer and I learned how to use tampons, I think, because of either my mom or an old American Girl doll sort of like book that was left lying around, whatever. If you know about the book and you know that it's scarring, then you know. Yeah. But I remember I thought of my friend who I was like, oh, this is a friend who also like, she had sex, you know, like, and I was like, oh, like, she was like, I don't know how to use a tampon. And I was like, what do you mean you don't know how to use a tampon? You've had sex. And she was like, I've never used one before.
Wow.
And I taught her how to use it and she almost passed out. She was like, this is horrible. This is like horrible. Wow. Yeah. Well, some just girly things.
I recall having had asked my mother what a tampon was because they were like in her purse and stuff. And I don't recall what she told me because what I understood of it was what I'm about to tell you, which is what I told all of my friends.
Oh, no.
I thought somehow that it was like food for the eggs.
No.
I don't know where I thought that
like,
was going to go.
Like, I don't. Yeah. It's like I knew there were eggs
it's
involved
so wrong.
Somehow.
It's so wrong.
Like, in my mind, it's like, what does eggs mean? What is it?
We're in the region.
Well, actually, I mean, the fact that you even knew a period had anything to do with an egg
eggs.
Being released.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, that's
sure,
pretty
that's sure.
Pretty bad.
Well, I don't want to celebrate it in any way.
I want to be celebrating. I don't recall like who told me that I was wrong, but definitely nobody knew I was wrong when I first was telling. And then I don't remember how that story really ends, but that was me. That was me mansplaining in end of fifth grade.
Having like known you and also like watched you in interviews and things like that, I know that you grew up in Boston, which is white.
Yes.
Very white.
Yes, yes. Yeah.
I wonder, like, what was that like for you in middle school?
Yeah, it was interesting because my church, like, growing up, my church and my friends, my church, those were all black people. Those were all people who were also, like, immigrants and, like, kids of immigrants. And so I feel like I had, like, a bedrock of that.
Yeah.
I ended up going to, like, a predominantly, like, historically white institution and went to, like, a private school before that was, like, Catholic and, like, quite white and, like, that was just, a lot of it. And had, like, you know, weird experiences when I'm in, like, seventh grade and starting to meet new people. And then there's, you know, like, black people who are like, no, you're not black enough. And I'm like, what do you mean? Like, everywhere else, I thought this was, like, authentic. Like, I thought this was my personality.
You're telling me no, so I guess not.
Okay, yeah, so simply wrong. And I think there was, like, a huge kind of like internal crisis for me also, like both my parents are immigrants. So I think their relationship to blackness in this country is different than if you are like, you know, have roots in like slavery or like generations back of people who have lived here and had immigrated here or what have you. And so their relationship to blackness was different. And I remember, like, I would watch, like, the VH1, like, I Love the, or, like, you know, mm-hmm. Behind the Musics, or, like, whatever, like, History of, like, Rap. And I would, like, be, like, writing these things down and, like, immediately going to, like, LimeWire and, like, trying to, like, download as much music as possible, or, like, being, like, we're only watching TV1. Like, we're only watching BT. Like, I need to catch up. It's UPN only. Like, I need to do my research. Like, this is not authentic. The way that we have been living is not authentic. I'm like, okay, like, we're just here. Like, we just don't want you to, like, be, we were just watching, like, David and Goliath. Like, we didn't even know if it was that serious. So, yeah, I think there was, like, a kind of wild, kind of, like, a crisis moment. And then also I would have moments, you know, where even my dad would be like, oh, you're saying like a lot. And like, you're like going to school now with all these like white girls from West Roxbury or what have you. And yeah. Now you're like, oh my God, like. And I would be like, is that not how I talk? Like, how am I supposed to talk now? Like, what do I sound like? But yeah. I also wonder if there's like a thing to our sort of generation, and maybe this is wrong or whatever, but as I was growing up, like, we were starting to learn about things like injustices and like microaggressions. Like, I remember where I was when I learned that and being like, oh, I guess this has happened to me. And now these are things that I feel like are much more in like our cultural language.
Totally. Yeah.
But I just remember like feeling like, oh my God, like I'm learning about racism and I'm learning about my life, and I'm realizing like these things kind of apply to me, and I don't like it when somebody is like saying my hair is like crazy, you know. or I am being like, oh, I straightened my hair, I don't think it means anything. Does it mean anything? Like these sort of things were starting to all bubble up around that time. I don't really think they would be fully explored in my mind until like college, to be honest. But
but the seeds were planted.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, I'm just just enough older than you, just a couple years.
Yeah.
You know, that like I feel like that wasn't in the cultural lexicon until I was like in my late teens.
Yeah.
And it's different. It's like I feel like, I mean, especially as like a young white boy, I feel like I was kind of dying for more space for that conversation because I was conscious of it. But to like, you know, how much is a 13-year-old white kid going to be thinking about white privilege in the terms that we talk about it now, or all these, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's interesting to hear your reflections about that time. Like that term microaggressions, I also remember when I first heard it. And I just would have loved to have heard it earlier.
It's weird. It's weird. I don't know. And then it's like interesting, I think, about after I graduated high school, like seeing kids who are younger than me, like fully versed in it and being I'm old. I'm 18, but I'm old. And, you know, also like, I grew up very religious, which I think had a lot of really beautiful parts of it. And then there are also some parts of it where it's like I was a little bigot. And, you know, I just like honestly, like I had a...
Just to your dad.
Only to my mother. But like because I was in my head, I wasn't exposed to these things. And I had a friend who I remember being in like ninth grade and being like, I don't really know any gay people, you know? My friend being like, I'm gay. And me being like, oh my God, okay. Well, I guess gay people are cool. Like, I know one and you're my friend. But like that feeling of like learning, I think it just was happening as we were growing up. And that's kind of like an interesting thing to reckon with, especially when I think about like my parents and I talk to them and I'm like, you don't understand anything. And they're like, everything was the same until 10 years ago for us.
That's
like,
so interesting.
Like,
like
the changes we were experiencing were different changes. Like, our bad. Just give us a second to catch up.
Aya, you've mentioned a few times that you grew up religious, and I'm just curious sort of like, what has your evolution with that been? What's kind of your relationship to spirituality now?
Yeah. I think I consider myself a spiritual person. When I first moved to New York, I was trying to find another church. And that was like very exhausting spiritually and really draining, because I was like, I want to find a place that feels cool and young like I do, but also I don't want to be in a church that's like, and nothing matters. Like, we're not even reading the Bible today. And it's like, wait, what? Like, hold on. Come on. There's got to be like a middle. And then, I just felt kind of like sad by that. And then I think I just was like, I don't want to feel like I've like stepped away, or because there's like that term like backsliding that I feel like has such a.
I've never heard that.
Yeah, I've never heard that either.
It's very Christian term, but it has such like a harshness almost. And I remember being younger and being like, oh, she backslid, you know, and like, and so I just was then like, oh my God, like, would somebody say that about me? Mm. And I think I just became very like internal. And then, you know, my really close friends and family, I felt kind of like distant from them almost. And then it became this thing of like, oh, are they judging me? Because now I'm living in New York and like, I have a Twitter and, you know, and I'm doing improv at night, you know, like, are they judging me? Mm. Oh, do they think badly of me? Oh, I wear jeans now. I only wore skirts.
Jeans, wow.
Yeah. So I started wearing pants to school also, like in high school. I would wear
pants and sneakers.
I remember meeting you and you are Baha'i.
Yeah.
And I remember being like, oh, this sounds cool. Oh, cool. And everybody who is like Baha'i is like, they're cool. And
I know. So I first started meeting Baha'i. I mean, I was much later. I was not like in college, I had a very a-religious, like kind of anti-religious upbringing. So for me, it's interesting to hear your reflections about like, because I don't know, those terms religion and spirituality, they're different. They have different baggage. Mm. They have different meanings for people.
Different baggage for sure.
And even for me, it's like I now am kind of redefining religion for myself because it's like I came to it through this totally individual pursuit of spirituality that had nothing to do with organized religion as I understood it.
Mm. Like to hear you say that when you met me and like heard that I was a Baha'i and that you had that impression feels really like healing to me because as a kid, I mean, the Baha'i faith is relatively small. Most of the time, people don't know what it is. And it's kind of like something that is another element of like making you an outsider.
It's not hard to imagine like a fifth grader being like, you're Baha'i, what's that? That's weird.
Yeah, exactly.
Kind of like I don't know what it is, therefore it is weird.
And one thing we've been talking about on this podcast is like now that we're all doing this and like going back into our middle school experiences, it's like I find myself wanting to like reconnect with people I knew in middle school who I haven't talked to since middle school and just like rehash that time. Like so much happens and is said to you and that you say that has an impact on you for a long, long time.
Yeah, for sure. There are things that I don't like about myself. It's just like, somebody said this to me once and they do not remember it. And I'm just like, well, core memory. my personality, how I view myself. It's interesting. You're so like, I don't know, sensitive at that age and so impressionable, like at those ages. Your brain is like, what is happening? Mm-hmm. What is going on? Everything is changing. I am getting taller at night. Like, you know.
Only at night.
Only at night. There was a night where I grew. Wow. I remember. Yeah, I woke up and I was like, I'm an inch taller. And I was like, this is weird. A lot of body stuff. Yeah.
So thinking of like intense things that happen at that time.
let's keep going.
Gorgeous segue. That's so loveliest voice in the world. So thinking of intense things that happen at that time.
One of the things that a lot of our users write about is not users.
We have a website.
Start again. That a lot of listeners have written about is crushes, like their first crush, their first time being rejected.
Yes,
the first time they saw them.
Absolutely.
Finally, I've been waiting.
Spill the tea. Okay, my first big crush was my friend, and literally, I say his full name. His name was Bill, and it started in fifth grade at the end of. School at the end of the school year, he origamied me a heart out of a dollar, and I saved it until I was like in high school, I think, because I was like, he loves me. He origamied me a dollar, a heart out of a dollar bill. This is literally my husband. And I was like, I'm gonna be Mrs. Bill. This is it. We're locking it down. And then my friend Michelle was like, he's learning how to origami. Like, he's girl, practicing on you. Get it together. He's just making shapes. Like, it's really not that serious. But he was like my first big crush, and I was like, I'm gonna be Vietnamese now. Like, this is like my, this is like my husband. This is my life. Like, I need to prepare. And obviously nothing happened. But he was like my first big crush. I just thought he was the best. And then
I mean, how well did you know him though? I'm curious. Like,
because
often, you know, crushes are like, you don't really know.
Yeah.
Your voice went up.
Are you
going to tell the truth?
No, you didn't hand it to me.
I'm still in love with Bill. I catch the first flight to Boston. Humiliating. And honestly, knowing my friend, somebody will listen to this and somebody will tell Bill. Hi, Bill. We talked a few months ago. My voice is getting
slide
so
into her
hot.
DMs, Bill. Slide
my
into her
is
DMs.
So hot.
Sweating.
Honestly, okay. We knew each other probably since third or fourth grade.
Can I interrupt to just ask, yes. What were you like once you realized you had those feelings? How did you act around
those probably boys? In my head, I feel like I was very like, whatever, I'm cool. I don't have crushes at all. Whatever, we're all friends. But then my first boyfriend was a guy that I went to church with. What happened is his brother asked me.
Oh, yeah, that's classic.
Yes, classic. His brother asked me, and I was like, tell him I say yes. And then we met in the back of the church, and we were like, okay, we're boyfriend and girlfriend now. Bye! Yeah. And I was, like, so religious and, like, so chaste. And mm-hmm. I was like, I love our little courtship. Now we are 12 and 13, and we will be dating. And then we will get married, and that is when we will kiss. And then, like, 3 months later, he was like, yeah, so this other girl said she's going to give me a kiss. So
that's
and it was like a girl that I kind of knew. And I was like, oh, yeah, like, it's fine, whatever. Like, I'm just one of the guys, like, no big deal. And then they dated. And then everybody's like, yeah, they're like making out. And I was like, oh, cool.
That is
really cool.
I mean, we're laughing. I mean, you're no, laughing.
But, no, I'm
but,
laughing
but at
now.
That
but
age, at that age, I feel like that's at the level of like, infidelity, betrayal. It's like
100%.
I was like, I have been cheated on. Yeah. I have been wronged. And then I was like, whatever. I'm gonna listen to like Muse. I'm gonna listen to secular music. I'm so heartbroken. but that was like my big heartbreak. And then kind of after that, I think I just was like, well, I just am not meant to date anybody. And I also was like, it's quite awkward. And then especially like, in getting older, like the seventh, eighth grade years, I didn't really feel very like pretty. I didn't really feel like, the boobs weren't in yet, you know? And then even when they were, I was like, these are hideous. I'm deeply ashamed of these. Hate these. Wait a minute. This is what came. No.
This is what everyone's been talking
about.
No.
We're keeping it. We're sweaters. And maybe I definitely had crushes. I know those are the years where, I'm sorry, I'm fidgeting. But I know those are the years where everybody's like, and I was like raging, horny, horn. And I just was like, I was not. Hasn't really kicked him yet. Okay, well, everybody's really embarrassed about things. Not me. I'm just kind of reading my books, praying, and thinking.
I wish I knew you in high school.
Yeah, like my first kiss wasn't until I was like 15 or 16. And it was like a spin the bottle game with a friend. And then I was like, that was my first kiss. But I didn't really like start dating until like college. Then I felt like, oh my God, this is so like I missed. I should have been marrying more people on the playground. Like I should have really I should have risked it all.
I love this idea that you can get to college and feel like you're so in, and not you, like all, I think all of us arrived to that age. And feel like we're so inexperienced because of this preconceived notion of what it is to be, you know, you see, basically, I mean, what we often touch on here, because I also what I've been doing for most of my life, you know, making movies, TV, like you see these images of people in college who are being played by like 27-year-olds who were like, yeah, well, I mean, I'm in a polyamorous relationship. And I'm like studying, you know, and it's like, wow, that's so evolved.
I recently. I filmed a movie last year that like hasn't, whatever. But I filmed a movie last year where I played a high schooler, senior in high school, and I was like, oh my god, like I'm part of the problem now. This is so exciting.
I'm not gonna deny that.
I'm gonna distort some child's view of what they should look like. Oh my god, I also, wow, I can't believe, I was writing fan fiction about celebrities, but it literally would not be like, it wouldn't be romantic in any way.
Going through the rapture.
No, it was like, I would write fan fiction that would be like, Hillary Duff and Avril Lavigne, like, go to the mall and, like, have a good day.
That's so sweet. My fan fiction
was, like, the people that I think are cool having a good day.
That's so sweet. What a sad child.
Crazy fantasy. Two people having a nice time. I believe this. Microsoft Word. Eat this up. Yeah. Who else did I love? I loved Natasha Bedingfield. Mm-hmm. Vanessa, oh no, and I forget her last
Carlton?
Name. Vanessa Carlton.
A Thousand Miles.
The piano.
I bought that album at like the last Sam Goody in in Boston. At the South Shore Plaza, yes.
Back at it again at the South Shore Plaza.
You know I had to hit the South Shore Plaza. Come on.
Maybe they'll sponsor this podcast.
Yeah, it's still there.
Sam Goody.
Sam Goody will sponsor.
And you know, the first CD I bought was at a Sam Goody, but that was like in the heyday of Sam Goody.
Yeah. This was like kind of the... Sam Goody was dying out there. Yeah, because iTunes was starting to happen. Even though I was like, "Can we please put the credit card in the computer?" And I was like, "No, they'll find us." You know. Okay, this is a random story, but just related to my dad being like, "They'll find us." One day there was a knock on the door that was like, "Hi, we're scouting for a movie. Would you be interested in using your home?" Actually, it's going to be directed by Martin Scorsese. And my dad was like, "You think I was born yesterday? You think I came to America for you to tell me Martin Scorsese is coming to town?" Get off my porch. And so my dad was like, "No, absolutely not. And my daughter has piano lessons, so you got to go." And they were like, "If you wait like an hour, we will let you meet Martin Scorsese and Leonardo DiCaprio." And I was like, "You must think I'm an idiot." "I got to take my daughter to piano. Do I play piano today? No." And did my freaking annoying neighbors end up getting a picture with Leonardo DiCaprio? Yes. Yes, they did. Oh, and obviously, I'm really over that memory.
Obviously.
Dang, man.
Yours didn't go up several levels?
No. It stayed low. I am heated. I am still upset about this one. But anyway, I think maybe that inspired the pivot to entertainment industry. I'm like, I need to get my moment. I need to avenge this moment and just meet Martin Scorsese and have him look at my childhood home.
Maybe he'll be a Podcrush listener.
Seems likely.
Sure. You listening to the podcast?
You think I was born yesterday, Sophie? Come on. That age, the seeds of identity seem to really start blossoming. Start growing.
For sure.
I'm curious, like, for 6th and 7th and 8th grade IO, what did you think made people happy then? Not like you wanting to people please and make people happy, but like, or maybe that's part of it, but like, how would you have defined happiness then? Like, what was the, you know, like, what's the thing you thought life was about getting, and how has that surprisingly remained the same or evolved to now?
Well, I know I wanted to marry Leonardo DiCaprio.
Not Bill.
I wanted to marry Leonardo DiCaprio. And maybe there was a time when I had a chance. Now I think I'm a little too old.
I think he'd laugh at that.
We're never going to meet each other. I know that I wanted to marry Leonardo DiCaprio for sure. I remember being a really happy child. And then around those middle school years, I think comparison started to kick in a lot. And I think also things that now I am very aware are biological, chemical, because of my family history. I was like starting to get sad and like anxious. And I didn't understand why. And I think I started to fundamentally think like, oh, maybe I will not be as happy as other people, or the people who are happy and seem like they have everything together are the people who like have $100 to blow at like Hollister, and like, and I don't have those things. And so I had moments of happiness with like friends and family and like different groups or whatever, but I think it was the beginning of a period of like a lot of stress for me. And when I look at pictures of myself at that time, sometimes I get so like emotional because I like, I can see little me like being kind of like, because when I was a kid, I was so like, talk to everybody. Oh, I was talking on the street. Like my mom has like 80 stories of like, and then you said this to this woman and then we had to pull you away. And then as I started getting older, I think I did start getting a little more internal, a little more like reserved and a little more cautious. And I think, yeah, I don't know. I had like moments of happiness, but I wasn't really sure what it meant. And like now I would tell little me like, it's okay to like talk to somebody about these things. But I was like, just so, yeah, I was so like internal, and also was very like, okay, I can just like pray about this for like an hour and maybe it'll go away, or I'll just like journal and I won't really like talk to anybody about it, because I think I still was aware that people perceived me as like like a happy kid. And I didn't want to change those perceptions. And I like have a memory of like eighth grade, like, oh my God, so heavy. I have a memory of like calling my best friend and just crying and being like, I don't know why I'm crying. Like, do you like ever get like this? And her being like, not really. And me being like, oh, okay. Like, I think this is kind of like who I am now or whatever. Like, I have to be like goofy, silly, and then like... Then there's like nobody to really talk about. And also I think growing up both religious and first generation, therapy was not like a word in our house. And like a therapist is somebody who like takes you away from your family, you know, like that was like my perception of like mental health and like well-being and stuff like that. So is that an answer to your question?
Yeah, no, I mean, there's a couple things I heard. I mean, so for... It's funny because for me growing up, like very much not having a religious upbringing, a therapist did also sound like it was like a, it sounded like something that's like, oh, so you have problems.
Yeah.
So I mean, there definitely was a general stigma. Of course, that was also, again, like the difference of like 4, 5, 6 years, every generation now is actually significant. So like, I did have a bit more of a, like that prototypical American, like it's
100%. Just,
those archetypes were very, very firmly like in the minds of youth, whereas they are not so much, they're just not the same now.
No, I mean, it's like huge to think about like the fact that I think there are people who are public figures who even speak about mental health. Whereas, you know, all the Britney Spears stuff in the documentary was happening. I very much remember like being like, was she crazy? You know? And like, that's like fodder for jokes. And like, that was just the time. That was like how it felt. And it's like, so much has changed, I think, for the better in terms of just being able to like speak about this stuff and even being able to be like, oh, I am sad.
I wonder, you touched on this a little bit in your answer to Penn's question, but if you were to be able to go back and give young Io any advice, and not, I think the other day Penn said this in a really nice way, like not to change anything about what happened throughout your life, but just like if you could say anything to
encourage.
Her.
Encourage.
Yeah. First, I would definitely give her a hug and she would be like, we don't hug in this family. And I'd be like, I know, but you will work through that. You will learn how to hug people. And then I would be like, hey, this like rain boots phase is really, it's actually like not going to be it. Rain boots are not going to have a moment. And neither are newsboy hats. So
wait a second. You were wearing both of those.
Yeah.
At the
that
same
was
time?
The look. Oh my God. And vest.
How bold. Wait a second.
Our senior year, we had a day where we dressed as ourselves in seventh grade, and I showed up, and everybody immediately knew skinny jeans, graphic t-shirt, vest, newsboy hat, ring boots.
I totally had a vest. And even when I was in college, I had these like at NYU, I had like yellow rain boots, and I was like, these are cool.
Yeah. I've been a trigger, here we go. But I really have been disturbed by the like vest revival. I've been like really like I cannot participate. I watch, I feel joy and love for everybody who is finding this beautiful and connective to themselves, but I literally cannot touch that movement. There is something dark that I have not resolved with myself. But that was like, that was my uniform.
And I'm impressed, kind of.
My friends in eighth grade all got me newsboy hats as a birthday gift, and I cried. I was like, this, I am seen by these people. Wow. These are the best people I know. They all got me newsboy hats. They all pitched in and went to Aldo.
Oh my God.
And they all got me newsboy hats. Children, if you knew the magic of the mall. But yeah, that would be first order of business. And that is prescriptive, but I have to tell her.
Yeah,
and then really, I know it's so cliche, but I really would just be like, it is going to be okay. Mm. Like, I feel like I had this idea that like when you grew up and you had a top down car and you lived in Greece and you shared a pair of pants with your four best friends.
I wonder where you got that idea.
And
so novel.
Was that? And, oh, I just realized what that was.
And you know, and like randomly your hair is straight and blonde now. And and you're dating a guy who you think is 17, but is actually played by a 35-year-old man. When all of that, you know, it, like that's what I thought that growing up was. And like things got wrapped up and your life was like awesome. And it's like, no, it's a journey. And like there's ups and downs and blah, 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 life. But I just really think I did not process that as like a child. Like I was so desperate for this idea of like, X will happen and my life will like change. And now I feel like I don't know, you realize a lot of times when you get what you want, that's when you're like, oh my God, the world, like what? Yeah. Now I definitely don't know what's going on. Mm. I definitely don't know what I want. I definitely don't know what's left and what's right. And so
there's a need for cultural spaces to give expression to those thoughts because, you know, if everyone at that age and most ages are having these thoughts, it's like that space for cultural expression, because the irony is that once I got that reference, I actually realized I know the people who are part of that reference.
Very well.
And I can tell you that all those people at that age were having the same thoughts.
If you told me that at the time, maybe you should go back in time.
That's what I'm doing.
Tell me that as a child. Because she
making this podcast to atone for my sins. 11-year-old Aya would be like, this guy's righteous. I'm with him.
I'd be following you. My mother would be like, wait a minute, what? We got there.
That's the one that has never happened. I've gotten a lot of nicknames, but that's not one.
Pentecostal.
Well, thank you for coming.
Yeah.
Thank you for coming into our home
this
here.
This was so nice. Yeah. I'm so glad I got to chat with you all. Yeah, I feel so nice. Ooh, I'm going to listen to Philip Glass on the way home.
Wow. Today's story is all about periods. Don't miss it. Period. You guys, I'm going into the seventh grade. I'm doing it. It's going to be my year. I'm 12 years old, living 45 minutes outside of St. Louis in a little town in Illinois. It's 1993, and I'm so excited to go back to school. I've got my favorite homeroom teacher, and my best friend is in my class. Life is pretty good. So I walk in on the first day of school. And there he is, the Jesse Cooper in my home room. Jesse is popular, cute, funny, and everybody agrees. And as the weeks go by, I, Crystal Johnson, am somehow becoming friends with him. What a dream come true. Like, the other day, he passed me by in the hallway, smiled at me, and I melted. Anyway, I'm walking towards my locker, and I spot Jesse. So, I smile coyly as I open my locker, but see, now I'm trying to balance eye flirting while surreptitiously reaching for a maxi pad. Not just any old maxi pad, one of those classic 90s thick granny panty maxi pads, and what I fail to notice is that my backpack is open and it's tilted downwards. Not one pad, not two pads, all of my maxi pads came crashing out of my bag, cascading, waterfalling, TLC, just as Jesse walks by my locker. What do? I throw myself over them, using my body as a shield to hide the pile of maxi pads littering the floor in front of my locker. I'd like to remind you that we're in the 90s right now, and people are not woke about periods yet. Nobody is celebrating that ish. You hide your monthly visitor like you hide an STD. So, here I am, sprawled out on the hallway floor, covering those pads like a dog covering the hole he's used to bury his bone. And I snap out of it. I look up, and whose eye is the first to catch mine? The Jesse Cooper's. Of course. He keeps looking at me, half pity, half amusement. Oh, Jesse. At this moment, I pray for the earth to split open and swallow me whole. No dice. So I bolt up, pick up all the pads in one fell swoop, shove them in my locker, and I sprint to the bathroom, only to discover that in all the commotion, I have completely bled through my underwear onto my pants. What, you want more? You want a punchy ending? Okay, fine. I bled to death. Bye.
Podcrushed is hosted by Penn Badgley, Nava Kavalin, and Sophie Ansari.
Our executive producer is Nora Ritchie from Stitcher.
Our lead producer and editor is David Ansari.
Our secondary editor is Sharaf Entwistle.
Special thanks to Peter Clowney, VP of Content at Stitcher, Eric Eddings, Director of Lifestyle Programming at Stitcher, Jared O'Connell and Brendan Bryans for the tech support, and Shruti Marate, who transcribes our tape.
Podcrushed was created by Nava Kavalin and is executive produced by Penn Badgley and Nava Kavalin and produced by Sophie Ansari. This podcast is a Ninth Mode production. Be sure to subscribe to Podcrushed. You can find us on Stitcher, the SiriusXM app, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen. If you'd like to submit a middle school story, go to podcrushed.com and give us every detail.
And while you're online, be sure to follow us on socials, or we're telling everyone that your mom still walks you to the bus stop. You don't want that. It's at Podcrush, spelled how it sounds, and our personals are at Ben Badgley, at Nava, that's Nava with three N's, and at Scribble by Sophie. And we're out. See you next week.
No, it's so funny. Do it. Just do a take with it. Just do a take with it. I'm going to do my joke again. You do yours. We'll both laugh.
Okay. Wait, can we keep that in the, can that be the Easter egg at the end? I'm going to do my joke. You do your joke. Then we'll both laugh.
Stitcher.